Hello, welcome to this episode of Countercurrents. I'm Larry Johnson. I've tentatively titled this, Why Donald Trump Deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. And if you think I'm shilling for Donald Trump, just hear me out. There is a bit of a sarcastic take on this. Thanks to Donald Trump, the leaders, key leaders of BRICS, President Putin, President Xi of China, Prime Minister Modi of India, met this week at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and then established very clearly that a new era in international affairs, world politics, world economics is dawning. It's coming to life. And I argued that none of this would be happening were it not for Donald Trump. And not just Donald Trump, but let's give some credit to Joe Biden, too. I mean, we don't want to leave him out of the Nobel Peace Prize category because it started with Biden, his refusal to negotiate with Vladimir Putin, his refusal to entertain the serious concerns that the Russians had about NATO moving to the east steadily. That led to the start of the special military operation, Russia intervening to preserve the rights of Russian-speaking citizens of Ukraine, who were culturally and historically really part of Russia. Were it not for what Biden did, it's very likely Russia would never have started that attack, and that would not have been accompanied by the sanctions that were levied upon Russia. About every sanction imaginable. Yet out of those sanctions, Russia and China started working more closely together. Now, BRICS had been around for almost 10 years, and it's been an idea. It's been one of those things, maybe nice to go to other people's countries and do some sightseeing. But it really hadn't taken on the serious aspect of being an alternative financial trading system until really a year ago in Kazan. And what happened in Kazan was a result of the preceding 2 years of sanctions against Russia and sanctions on China, as these two powerhouse nations came to realize there was nothing they could do to satisfy, placate, or make peace with the West. They were going to have to pursue their own interests and serve the interests of their own people, as opposed to shackling themselves to Washington or to Europe. But even a year ago in Kazan, while Russia and China, I think, were fully on board with the necessity in BRICS and trying to move it ahead, when Brazil took over the presidency last October, there was a lot of concern that BRICS was just going to now drift along. But the folks in Rio and Brasilia surprised everybody by scurrying around and putting together a very successful summit. And it was on the at the end of that summit in Rio in June that Donald Trump hit Brazil with sanctions. Now, understand, it's one or tariffs, it's a form of sanction. Hitting Brazil with these tariffs made absolutely no economic sense whatsoever, because Brazil, the United States, had a trade surplus with Brazil. In other words, whatever Brazil sent us, we sent more to Brazil. So that relationship, from an economic standpoint, was more beneficial for the United States. And yet the United States decided to single out Brazil because of domestic political issues surrounding Bolsonaro and Donald Trump deciding to intervene in the domestic political politics of Brazil. Well, that energized, infuriated President Lula, and this gave BRICS another big boost. But now we come to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting. This meeting was originally, this grouping was created, I think, originally for strictly security issues, discussions about combating terrorism and other threats. The original membership was the members of the former Soviet Union, like Belarus, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan. It also included China and some Asian country nations. But now it has grown both in size and in purpose. And clearly the stars of this year's meeting in Tianjin were Vladimir Putin, President Xi, and Prime Minister Modi. The picture are those three men having a hearty laugh together, chuckling. We have no idea what they were talking about, but they were clearly in sync with one another. And so what this means is that we now see that India, who was somewhat lukewarm, is warmed up dramatically. Now, the story of India's expanding role now with both BRICS and the SCO comes at a time where Donald Trump keeps touting that, oh, he settled seven wars. And one of those wars is the war between Pakistan and India, to which Prime Minister Modi and his foreign minister, Jai Shankar, have strongly said, no, that's not true. The United States played no role in securing that peace. But Trump's desire to take credit for it says a lot about him. To follow that up with the effort to bully India into cutting off receiving supplies of oil, which are inexpensive relative to other sources, and then or else face a 50% tariff. Trump and his advisors apparently don't know how to do basic research. Had they done the basic research, they would have understood that India's trade with the United States is not that significant. You know, it accounts for 2.3% of Indian GDP. So, you know, it's not nothing, but it's not a game changer in terms of the ending or destroying the Indian economy. Whereas the oil that is imported into India and refined in India, while it only represents 1.5% of the Indian gross domestic product, that oil is used to produce diesel and gasoline, diesel fuels in particular, which are fueling the trucks that drive across India hauling goods and people. So it really occupies a critical role within the Indian economy, one that effect would be far larger than simply kind of, you know, not trading with the United States. But it was this bullying move by the United States that further energized Prime Minister Modi, and he started talking to President Xi of China. They had conversed last year at Kazan. That was the first good opening brought about because of Vladimir Putin. But now Modi made a point, I'm going to China and I'm going to talk with the President Xi. So right there is where I said, hey, there's where Donald Trump gets, should be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. He's brought India and China together, who have had, to be kind, a rancorous relationship going back decades. All over territory on their shared border. But now, instead of firing at each other, ordering troops to shoot at one another, they're talking together, reopening flights between China and India, and recognizing that they're partners in something bigger than just their own mutual relationship. That is what Trump has failed to understand, that in his efforts to use tariffs to coerce these other countries, he doesn't realize that the BRICS nations do very little trade, with the exception of China, do very little trade with the United States. And here's China is in a completely different category because of its size, because of the volume of traffic, but more importantly, because of some of the specific elements, particularly pharmaceuticals, which also come out of India, magnets, rare earth minerals that are essential for U.S. production of weapons systems, communication systems for military purposes. China has slowed that down, and the United States has pulled back from hitting China with these tariffs. Because the reality is, finally, Trump or someone in his administration came to the understanding that the United States didn't have that kind of leverage anymore over China. This is not 30 years ago. 30 years ago, the majority of the world were trading partners. They were majority trading partners with the United States. Today, that picture has completely flipped, where the majority of the world are major trading partners with China, not with the United States. Clausewitz, in talking about war, talked about that, you know, it was a dimension of politics, but other things come into play. And one of those things is now at play in the world economy, is the stagnation that's taking place in the West and the revitalization that's taking place in the East. In the past, when India or Russia or China wanted to do anything in the realm of international trade, they had to go out and buy U.S. dollars. So that demand for dollars indirectly created, helped the United States finance wars around the world and finance the buildup of the Department of Defense and the Pentagon. That is now going away. One of the other aspects with respect to BRICS, as BRICS comes into its own, is the fact that when Russia sells to China and China buys from Russia, they do so in their respective currencies. They're not going out on the open market to buy dollars. The same between Brazil and India, or India and China, India, Brazil, and any of the other countries that are now part of BRICS, with Iran and China. They are dealing in their own national currencies. Well, that ends up reducing the demand for dollars. And how do you boost demand for dollars? Well, you lower the price. So the reality is, you've got a surfeit of dollars flooding the world and no real demand for it. Not like it was 3 years ago, for example. And one of the other aspects that came out of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was the talks of setting up a development bank, a bank where other countries could go and get loans, get financing without having to beg the World Bank and the United States for dollars. So while BRICS was not conceived initially as a, quote, competitor to the dollar, BRICS was set up in order to prevent the United States from being able to bully and dictate the policies of countries like India, China, Russia, Brazil, South Africa, Iran, Vietnam. BRICS, we are witnessing the dawning of it is not just a new financial order, it will be a new political order. I think, as both President Putin and President Xi have made clear, this is not about establishing a new hegemon who's going to rule over and dictate to other countries what they must do, what they can do, and what they cannot do, as has been the case with the United States. Instead, it's working on creating full-fledged partnerships with countries primarily in the global South. And the intransigence of the United States and Europe means that as this BRICS phenomena grows and becomes institutionalized, the United States and Europe are going to be caught on the outside looking in. They're no longer going to have the luxury of dictating or controlling what other countries can do. Because right now, you know, look at the threats that are facing Iran and the threats that have faced Russia, and there's the new threats against India and Brazil. The United States, instead of using its economic and political power for good, is instead using it to bully, to threaten, and to harm other countries. And not surprisingly, those other countries have finally had enough. And they're saying, we're not going to take this anymore. They're not looking for a direct confrontation with the United States, but they're not going to submit and surrender to the U.S. will. We have heard within the last 24 hours, I'm recording this on Wednesday, September 3rd, the parade in China ended about 12 hours ago, putting on display the magnificence of what China can accomplish in terms of organizing and executing an event. To assemble military forces like that, who marched with precision and unison, says something highly complimentary about the organization and discipline of the Chinese military. Contrast that with what the pathetic display we saw in July with Donald Trump's parade in Washington. Soldiers who couldn't even march in step, soldiers who were overweight, sloppily dressed. What we saw in China were immaculately dressed, people moving with great precision in large numbers, that to execute that, to have that happen, means there were a number of people that cared, that gave a damn. They took time to prepare. And we saw really the same thing in Russia's May 9th celebration of the end of the Great Patriotic War. What was unfortunate is, as the event was getting ready to unfold, Donald Trump felt compelled to put a message out on Truth Social, sort of, in a way, giving a backhanded compliment to the Chinese, but also complaining that the Chinese weren't recognizing the great sacrifice and blood that the United States shed to free China. Trump once again displayed his total lack of class, his total lack of diplomacy, and his incredibly annoying narcissism. The reality about the war in the Pacific is, it is true that that is a war that the United States primarily won over Japan. But China's role, both in terms of distracting, being a way to draw off some of the Japanese military force, played an important role. But more importantly, the United States only lost 110,000 killed in action in the Pacific theater, from all the battles in the Philippines, from Guadalcanal, starting with Pearl Harbor, up through the battles in Okinawa and Iwo Jima. 110,000 dead. Chinese military deaths killed by the Japanese, 3.5 million. Estimated 13 to 17 million civilians also killed by the Japanese. So it's understandable that the Chinese would not feel compelled to offer profuse thanks to the United States when China paid the far greater price in terms of loss of human life and the suffering that the people of China endured. But this is another example that of jealousy on the part of Donald Trump. Is, I think, maybe a unconscious or conscious realization that the world is moving away from the United States, not moving towards it. But Trump did have made a comment about how right now the United States is the hottest, the best, the most exciting place, the freest. And all you have to do is now go to China or go to Russia. There are, you'll see cities, multiple cities in China that the United States doesn't have anything, with all of its cities combined, they can compare with what China has accomplished. So China and Russia are cutting a new path forward as partners. They're doing it through BRICS. They're doing it through the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. We're seeing, we're awaiting President Putin's remarks at the Vladivostok International Economic Forum. But what we're seeing is the birth of something new. I would not be surprised to see the United Nations become increasingly irrelevant, and that a movement develops to create a BRICS organization with all the nations involved. They can operate in some measure like the United Nations once did, but it would be under, let's call it, better management. Right now, the situation with France and England, or the United Kingdom, holding veto power in the UN Security Council is absurd. They should no longer, they're no more entitled to that than any other country in Europe. It should be based primarily upon economic power. To that end, yes, the United States, India, China, and Russia should definitely be seated at that table. But how it's sorted out with determining a representative from Africa and a representative from South America, most likely BRICS, or Brazil as part of BRICS. But these are the changes that are coming afoot, coming down the pike. The next 3 to 8 weeks, I think, are going to be portentous and momentous. I think we're going to see a significant economic crisis in the West. No telling how far the contagion of that will spread. And we'll see significant military progress by Russia with respect to Ukraine. And as the war in Ukraine winds down, and as Russia, China, and India emerge as the new economic powers in the world, perhaps we'll have a way forward to peace. But right now, everything is in play. Thanks for watching. I'm Larry Johnson. This has been the latest episode of Countercurrents. Hit the like and subscribe button. Share it with your friends and family. Goodbye.